Welcome to the UK's only radio show about HIV and living a healthy life. It's the HIV Hour. On today's show, we feature a rundown of the latest news and talking points about living with HIV from the Brighton area and the world at large. Also, information on Brighton's HIV organisations and some other events. Do email us at hivhour@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter at @HIV_hour and Instagram at @HIVHour. If you miss the show on a Thursday at 7 p.m, then you can listen again at 4 p.m. on Monday and at noon on Tuesday, or indeed catch up with an older show by going to the Listen Again page on RadioReverb.com.
Good evening. How is everyone today?
Yeah, okay. I've got a bit of sniffles, first time this year, but I'm not going to let it get in the way of anything. But anyway, how have you been, Stephen?
Yeah, I've been okay. My diabetes has been annoying me, as it tends to do, but I'm feeling a lot better today than I did yesterday, so that's good.
You've been busy, Josh, haven't you?
Yeah, I went to there was in Brighton. There was a last Sunday was like a stakeholders lunch with Lunch Positive and the Martin Fisher Foundation. And it's basically getting people together who are in that field and also have HIV to talk about stigma and how we can move forward. Is how it impacts people, many experiences they've had, and how we can things we can do to combat stigma.
Yeah, and eliminate it as well, isn't it?
Right.
Yeah,
that's brilliant.
Mm-hmm. Some really good ideas. It's funny because I wasn't really in the mood to talk, and then all of a sudden I was chit chat.
You got that buzz. Because sometimes that happens. You feel as though I'm not going to be participating on whatever it is. And then you get a buzz. I thought, actually, I feel like, and you end up taking over, don't you, Josh?
No.
Well, that's just me.
That's just you, so.
It's just you.
How about you, Stephen? You went to the did you go to the march in London last week?
I did. I went to the Respect My HIV march. So that started off down at Parliament Square and walked up to Trafalgar Square, and it was great. It was really good. There were a lot of really important, you know, HIV activists up there, and doctors, and you know, people from all fields, just talking about living with HIV or working in the HIV sector, and it was just really nice to be walking along the streets with banners, and just being very proud of living with HIV and not feeling that shame that, you know, so many of us have felt, you know, over the years. So it was a wonderful day.
I mean, yeah. I've heard some of the videos that you took. They're amazing, and we're going to try, aren't we, guys? We're going to try and get some of those recordings on the show, because some of the statements, some of those, you know, some of the speakers spoke about were amazing. So, but no, it was really good.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people there, Stephen.
There was probably about 150, and there was, but it was really interesting because there was people from that had been affected by HIV through all different ways. There was a guy that got up and talked who was one of the only haemophiliacs left that's still alive, that got HIV in the 80s due to blood product, you know. Mm-hmm. So it was really interesting in hearing his story as well. So it was kind of all different fields, all different sides of HIV, so you could say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah. Mm. So on the show this week, we've got a great show this week, haven't we?
We did a great interview, didn't we, this week?
It was from Bulgaria. It's a sad story, actually. He's gone through it, hasn't he? So, but he just tells us his story and about his partner, Craig. So, so that's on later.
Good. Mm-hmm. I'm looking forward. Looking forward to hearing
that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And also, there's later on, we've got an interview with a guy called Harry Hillary, from Brighton, who's launching an exhibition called the Brighton AIDS Memorial, for World AIDS Day. So wow. It's just talking about that. And mm-hmm. Yeah, it's coming up. And also our 1 minute world news roundup.
Yes, we have. Mm. Yeah, things are starting to hotten up now for World AIDS. A lot of things are happening. I know you've taken part in something, Steve, and I've taken part in a couple of things, and lots of stuff going on for the yeah. run up, and there's lots of exciting things happening.
Yeah, so yeah. So should we get on with the show?
Yes.
Yeah. HIV Hour is the UK's only show for people living with HIV, sharing stories, news and views on living positively with the virus.
If you've just tuned in, this is the HIV Hour on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM in the Brighton area and .com online and also on podcast. Today we have a really special guest on the show, an interview, can you believe it, guys, from Bulgaria, yes, all the way along. I have actually been to Bulgaria once, but it's just amazing. We've got Martin. I'm going to say Martin and bring him in, and Martin's going to pronounce his surname, because I don't want to be naughty and get it wrong, Josh. So,
I understand that.
Okay, so hi, Martin. Please hey, Martin. Introduce yourself.
Hello, Sue. Hello, Josh. Well, my name is Martin Gyorev. In the rural mountains of Bulgaria, a small village with only 6 residents.
Wow. I have
been living here for the past 8 years now.
And you enjoy it?
Yeah, it's nice, remote, and doesn't have many people around, so everything is calm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes.
Mm-hmm. So, Martin, it's wonderful that you're on the show, and it's going to be great to hear your story. And you know, this is an opportunity to tell your story. We have all different things, all different stories on the HIV Hour, so it's really great to have you on the show today. So do tell
thank
us,
you for
Martin.
That opportunity. Sadly, my story is with a sad ending. At the end, I lost my partner, and I still bury the consequences of what happened. I have been with my partner, Craig, my late partner, for more than 10 years. He was extremely healthy and a nice person, and I haven't seen him taken even a single aspirin or a headache tablet or anything. So one winter, it was January, I guess, he started feeling ill. He thought that he had a cold or something. And yeah, a couple of weeks after, he didn't improve. So I took him to my doctor, because he didn't have a doctor here. As being British, he wasn't part of the Bulgarian health system yet. I took him to the doctor, they made some tests, and they said that he has some sorts of anemia, that his hemoglobin is low, his iron levels are low, and they prescribed him iron tablets. A couple of days after we went to the hospital, he was even in worse shape, as he was not being mobile anymore. I had to take him around with the wheelchair because he was getting tired. And he wasn't able to walk. So we went to the hospital, we went to the room, and of course he didn't want to waste my time, so he suggested that I would leave. But I said, no, I just want to see what's going on in the beginning, how they're treating you, etc. Because of course, it was a foreign country for him still, no matter that he was living more than 15 years in Bulgaria. His Bulgarian was bad, but also the level of the doctors, their level of English wasn't good. So I had to translate for them. The main doctor and the nurse, they just walked into the room and said, take all of his clothes and get out.
Wow.
Then I asked them, well, if you're not going to treat him, please tell me where can I take him? Because obviously he's not mobile, he's tired, he's barely moving. I cannot leave him like this. He needs special medical attention right now, not tomorrow, not the day after, right now. And then just said, well, we don't care. We will notify you in 2 weeks. We made some tests and we send them to another lab to confirm the tests. We think that he is HIV positive.
Right.
And this was the first time we heard that thing.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, he was kind of catching some of the wording and he started crying, of course, and he was very stressed about it. I was panicking, of course, but I didn't want it to show because I needed to be strong and to figure out what to do. After that, well, we were outside of the hospital. I took him into the car and I started ringing literally every contact I have on my phone. It's obviously my partner needed help and I didn't know what to do. A friend of ours then suggested to go to the nearest university hospital, which was 150 kilometers away. I took him there. They said, no, cannot take him. We didn't know what happened in the previous hospital, why they kicked you out, or if you walked out by yourselves, etc. And then this was going on for like a couple of hours. Again, after that, I called several of my friends and they suggest, well, go to Sofia, to the capital. We have some connections there. They will take you in. So it was the same day, but almost midnight. We took him to one of the hospitals in Sofia. They took him in. And for the first time, they asked, can we make this test to see if he is HIV positive or not? I said, well, if it will help to find out what's on, well, please do it. Yes, we need to figure out what's going on, how to treat him, and he needs to get better. Yeah, they did the test in the morning. They said, yes, he is HIV positive. By procedure, we need to send a second blood sample to the national laboratory. From there, in 48 hours, they'll confirm that he is HIV positive because this is the only lab that confirms the final result. And then we will send you to the hospital that deals with HIV patients. He was admitted to the HIV hospital and they started treating him with various stuff, medications. And I was 24/7 there because someone needed to take care of him, to help him eat, go to the bathroom, etc., and also translate between him and doctors.
Martin, can I just quickly ask you, I'm just trying to imagine, and I can't really imagine, to be quite honest, what you and Craig were going through at the time. And I'm just thinking of Craig, what was his state of mind in that moment? I mean, he didn't, you know, being in a country that he couldn't understand properly, and I know you were there sort of translating everything, but what was his, was he understanding what was going on?
Yeah, he was understanding. He was catching some of the Bulgarian words, but not all of them. Also, some of the doctors, they were trying to speak English. He was very sad, stressed, and depressed, and he was thinking, why is this happening? And he said several times, I wish I had cancer.
Really?
Right. Yeah.
And actually, when he was talking to his mother and his brother in the UK, he was actually telling them that it's something like cancer, but they're still not sure.
Yeah.
Because he was saying, yeah, well, cancer brings families together, but right. HIV splits mm-hmm. families apart.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, Martin, you've got the diagnosis by the sounds of it at this point. Okay. Craig, you said it's starting to feel a bit better. They're starting to do some form of treatment with him. What happens from there, Martin?
They started digging, doing several tests, various tests, because his hemoglobin levels, they were up and down like a yo-yo, literally all the time. And they are doing blood transfusion, he starts getting better, and in the next morning, they're again back down as the day before the transfusion. And it was up and down, up and down. They did 10 blood transfusions.
Wow.
They were just like giving him water or something, not putting blood in his veins. So they started searching help from other specialists around the hospital, because in that hospital that he was in, they're specializing only in one thing. And they have to search for other specialists from other hospitals. But very few doctors from the other hospitals were willing to come and see what's going on.
Was that because of the HIV diagnosis then?
Yes. Yeah. In Bulgaria, there is a huge problem. When someone is diagnosed with HIV, if he has some other issues, they're sending him only to the HIV hospital. They're saying they have to deal with it. Many other doctors are refusing treatment to HIV patients. For the amount of people that are dealing with HIV, the places and the information that it's spreading around regarding HIV treatment, prevention, etc., is very limited, and it's only provided by NGOs. They are doing the heavy lifting in Bulgaria. Last year, the Bulgarian NHS, they made a huge boo-boo regarding degrees of treatment, medication for the HIV patients. So many of the medications were missing, and more than half of the patients in Bulgaria, they were left without treatment for a couple of months. So doctors had to change the therapies, etc., to be able to keep those people.
Martin, in Bulgaria, do you have to pay for your medication in Bulgaria, your HIV medication?
No, it's free, regardless if you have contributed to the health system or not.
So what happened, back onto the story, what happened with after the diagnosis, you went to HIV ward?
A couple of weeks into the HIV ward, different doctors were coming in and out, walking into the room, just looking at him without anything and walking out. I was then also in contact with a couple of the NGOs in Bulgaria regarding HIV. And they were also talking with different hospitals, with different specialists, to someone to have a look at Craig to try and figure out why his blood levels are so bad. So he was admitted to the hematology hospital in Sofia to make some tests to see if he has leukemia or some sorts of blood cancer that is actually killing his blood cells. The day he was admitted, they did one test. They took bone marrow. But actually, an hour and a half later, the doctor came in and said, oh, he's fine. He's not for here. The next day, we are sending him back to the HIV ward. The next day in the morning, I called the private ambulance because, of course, they didn't do anything else for us. I had to call private ambulance and transport Craig from one place to the other. And they gave me the paperwork, and in all of the paperwork it was saying we are waiting for results. So there was nothing in the paperwork what they did, what the results are, just saying waiting for results. Again, in the HIV ward, the doctors there were actually very good and helpful, and they were trying to explain everything and constantly talking and etc. We were kind of in contact with the British embassy as well, but the only solution for him getting into the UK was with a medical helicopter and doctors on board, which would have cost more than 15,000-20,000 euros, which none could afford that.
Of course.
And we were talking, we don't need them for like next month or in half a year. We need them now. And in May 2019, he passed away. And we were still waiting for
the
results.
Oh my god.
Wow.
Yeah, a couple of TV stations at the time contacted me to give an interview. I talked. I stand there with my face so everyone could see.
So yeah, you wrote a book, didn't you, Martin? Was that about you and Craig on telling the story and the experience of what you went through?
I was contacted by one of the NGOs. They were collecting stories about LGBTQ people here.
Yeah.
Because they were also aware and they were helping me during the time. So, yeah, we wrote a book called The Courage to Be.
Wow.
And it has 11 stories. For people like me and their struggles being gay in Bulgaria.
Amazing.
And how are you now? How are you feeling now?
Yeah.
Well, it's difficult. It's been more than 2 years, but it doesn't
really
get easier. When you go through something like this and when you see how your partner is dying. I had loads of issues afterwards because of interviews and trying to go to a doctor or to a dentist. They were telling me to go away because they were thinking as well that I am HIV positive too. They said, it doesn't matter if I am or not, you are obliged to treat me. You cannot refuse treatment regardless.
Martin, can I ask you something? Did Craig stay in Bulgaria after he passed, or did he come back to the UK, just out of interest?
Yeah, he stayed here.
He did, okay.
Yes, his wishes were this, to stay.
Right, okay. And did his some of his family come over? What happened?
At the time, his mother was living here.
Ah, right, okay.
Yes, but none of his other family members came.
Yeah, that must have been a traumatic thing to go through. And I feel and I see that you're still living it, because it's only a couple of years ago.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Is there a lot of misconceptions in Bulgaria? First of all, about the LGBTQ plus community, HIV, anything directly. What are the perceptions like in Bulgaria?
There is a lot of misinformation.
Mm-hmm.
Bulgaria is a bit of a homophobic country.
Right.
Actually, 2 days ago, there was an accident in one of the community centers.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're going through parliament elections right now, and one mm-hmm. of the parties, they forced themselves into the community center and they right. trashed the place.
It's still a battle, I think. It'll probably be a battle for a while, won't it? Yeah,
definitely.
Mm-hmm. But you're doing something already. You're speaking out. And what a great thing to do in Craig's memory, to stand up for him and yourself. So what you're doing is amazing. It may seem that it's small, but you know, I've got this thing. It's all the small things add up, don't they, Josh?
Absolutely, yeah. Amazing to come out and speak your story, because mm-hmm. then other people in different countries and around the world can hear this and get something from it. I think absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Even sad stories, they need to be told.
Yes.
And yes. Not forgotten. Yes. Because if I don't talk about it, it might happen to someone else.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I suppose the book that you've written about yourself and Craig will be a legacy also for him and yourself, you know, of what you experienced, what you went through, and for other people to read and hope to be empowered about your sad experience that you went through, and perhaps hopefully will help to attack some of the stigma that is still surrounded by, first of all, being gay, the second thing would be, and also being HIV positive. So, you know, what you're doing is quite a lot, isn't it, Josh?
Yeah, and we appreciate you coming on, absolutely.
I'm just thinking, where could people get a hold of your book, Martin? Is it online? How can people...
It is online. It's the NGO called Deistier.
Mm-hmm. You just spell that. Just.
It's deistvie.org.
Org. Okay, great.
Right.
Well, thank you for so much for coming on the show. Really appreciate
you, Martin.
It.
You take care. Okay.
You too.
Thank you.
Bye, everyone.
Bye bye.
Thank you.
97.2 FM. Radio Reverb.
So welcome back to the HIV Hour. Some community news now. I'm sat here with Harry Hillary. Hi, Harry.
Hello, Josh.
How are you doing?
I'm good. I've just had a lovely lunch, so I'm very well.
Oh, fabulous. So we're here to talk about World AIDS Day, and you have an amazing exhibition coming up, haven't you? Could you tell our listeners something about
it? Yeah, it's an exhibition which is led from an Instagram account I set up called the Brighton AIDS Memorial, which has now moved across to Queer Heritage South, their archive. But this exhibition features 15 names and stories from the Brighton AIDS Memorial, people who lived or associated to Brighton and sadly died from HIV in the past.
And so this is going to be at, could you tell our listeners where it's going to be?
Yeah, it's going to be the main exhibit is going to be at the Dorset Gardens Memorial Church on Dorset Gardens, the home of Lunch Positive.
Yeah.
And that's going to take place from the 24th of November and run through to the 4th of December. It's every day except Thursdays, and it's going to be open between 10 and 4 p.m. It's also featuring at the new Ledwood Centre, which is on Jubilee Street, just behind the Jubilee Library. There, it's going to be in the windows, so it's going to be displayed for the same time frame. And I think they're opening Fridays, Saturdays and Sundays, so you'll be able to have a coffee and a bit of cake there as well and drop in and see it there. So it's in two locations.
Which is great, really. Why is it so important?
For me, it's that I lived through the HIV crisis, as I'd call it, in the 80s and 90s in Brighton, and lost quite a few friends to the disease. And it just struck me that although they are referenced in the vigil where their names are called out, people really don't know who they were, what they did, what they were like, don't really know the essence of that person. So I thought it was important to remember them in a different way. For me, it almost keeps them alive in some strange way, but also to reference and recognise the trailblazers and the heroes of the period. There were quite a few in the city, and sadly, because of time and people moving on or sadly passing away, they've been kind of forgotten.
So it's
kind of name-checking those people who gave us the bedrock of what we enjoy in Brighton today in terms of HIV services.
Yeah, and can people still get involved with it then?
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, this is a project that started small and is evolving slowly but very, very organically and strongly. And anyone can get involved. If you've got a story or a bit of an anecdote or a bit of ephemera or a photograph or anything, you can contribute it to the archive. It'll feature, if it's a story of an individual, it'll probably feature on the Instagram feed. If it's something like a flyer from an old organisation or a photograph of something like a march, it'll go onto the Queer Heritage South site. If it's a physical piece, I've been given, I think one of the most wonderful things I was given recently was a book, a Nick Cave book, The Ass and the Angel. And it was given to me by somebody, and it was signed by Nick to the Body Positive in 1988. Wow. So things like that have come through, which are obviously important to cherish and look after. So those physical items will go in a collection in the Keep, which is just north of the city by University of Sussex. People don't know what the Keep is. It's a kind of the East Sussex County Council Records Office.
Yeah.
And they keep all sorts of stuff there. So things, physical items like this that are linked to this history would be kept in a place there for safekeeping.
Which is a great place for everything, isn't it?
Archiving everything. Yeah, and anyone can go and see them. You have to book to go and see the archives there, but it's a wonderful place, I'd recommend. So,
what struck you about this exhibition then, by doing it, and the stories behind the photos?
I think one of the joys of it is unearthing bits of information like the book, but also photographs of people that weren't around and they've emerged. But people that have been involved have had a similar reaction to myself, which is although it's been difficult at times to kind of go back to those times and actually remember stuff, and as you dig, you get recollections that have kind of been buried and they kind of come up, and there have been times that I've been quite upset by the process, but on the back of that you get this kind of sense of cathartic release, a kind of a sense that you're doing something that needed to be done a long time ago. By remembering those people, they are alive again in your imagination in a different way. I've found it really kind of therapeutic, actually. Yeah. I know from other contributors, they've felt the same. Some people have had kind of expressed an interest in contributing, and then have kind of disappeared off the radar, and then suddenly they emerge again with a whole raft of stuff. Somebody recently I met in a coffee shop in Seaford gave me orders of service, sort of old kind of papers from Body Positive, pictures of marches, all sorts of stuff that he'd been holding on to, didn't know what to do with. And after a bit of thought, he came back with all that stuff and has now contributed a story that's gone on the page as well.
That's amazing. So testament to that person.
Yeah. So I think it's hitting a nerve, and it's kind of a good nerve, and it's kind of bringing stuff to the fore that sadly would just disappear otherwise.
Yeah.
I mean, we've all got boxes of stuff, I know I have, of stuff, and it means nothing. If you passed away tomorrow and your family were left with your estate to deal with, they'd probably come across all these boxes and think, oh, it's rubbish, throw it away.
Yeah.
And it's lost forever. So if it captures some of that sort of stuff,
yeah.
The Nick Cave book is a great example of that. This person had held on to it, didn't know what to do with it, Now it's shared on the platform and it's archived somewhere so other people can see it.
And shared, as you say, yeah. People can actually see
yeah,
it.
Yeah, so that's the agenda, really, to try and capture the stuff, because none of us are getting any younger. You know, it's disappearing with us as we you know, shuffle off, as we all do. So it's important to capture it as a reference point for the future as well, to actually contextualise where we are now.
Yeah, because we're moving on, aren't we? We've moved.
Yeah, it's kind of... I mean, we're in such a different landscape now. Yeah. 30 years ago, I couldn't have imagined this landscape. So, you know, there are flaws with it, of course, but it's an amazing, amazing transition we've been through.
Yeah. Thank you. Could you just, for our listeners, just go over where the exhibition is and the times?
Yep. So it's the Brighton Aids Memorial. It's kicking off on the 24th of November until the 4th of December. It's in two locations. 10 of the panels, stories will be at the Dorset Gardens Methodist Church, which is open from 10 till 4, except Thursdays. And the other panels will be featured in the Ledwood Centre windows, same time frame, 24th of November to the 4th of December. And that centre will be open Fridays, Saturdays and Sundays as well.
And if you want to email you, it's brightonaidsmemorial@gmail.com.
Yeah, brightonaidsmemorial@gmail.com.
Fabulous. Thanks
Thank
for coming
you.
On, Harry.
Thank you very much.
Good luck with it as well.
Thank you.
This is the world of Radio Reverb.
So we've got the World Roundup, News Roundup now, haven't we?
Certainly have, and I've got something from the Independent online newspaper, and it's about a Jamaican deportation. Home Office faces legal action over HIV patient being denied treatment in detention. Now, apparently, increasingly concerned that our client reports, he goes on to say, into his seventh day detained and his seventh day without life-saving medication. That in itself, regardless of anything else, puts a chill down my spine. I don't know about you guys. You know, I'm not imagining 7 days without... I would be in panic stations. So that without reading anything else. So apparently, the Home Office has been threatened with legal action over an HIV patient who continues to be denied life-saving treatment while being held in an immigration detention centre, the Independent has learnt. Now, this chap is 42 years of old, and he was awaiting deportation to Jamaica and relies on daily medication to manage his condition and says the dosage for his other ailments, schizophrenia, so we're not just talking about HIV here, he's got other co-infections sort of thing. So yeah, it just goes on to say there's not too much more I can see about that. So basically that is still going on. But this is why, you know, some people just don't realise how important it is that, you know, we don't just take this medication to cure a headache or a cold. It's a part of who we are. We have to take that medication to be well, to stop us passing HIV on to anybody else. So I really do hope this comes to an end very soon for him. You know, this guy must be absolutely in, oh my goodness, I can't even begin to imagine.
Yeah. Scary. Yeah. Very scary.
Stephen, your story from Spain, is it?
Yeah, so my story was written by the European Society of Clinical Microbiology and Infectious Diseases. And it basically, Spanish doctors highlight the importance of targeting and testing older adults for HIV in a case reported and being presented at the European Congress of Clinical Microbiology and Infectious Diseases held this year. Dr. Enrique Garcia and colleagues from the Central Hospital of Asturias detailed the case of an 83-year-old man with a month-long history of fever and weight loss who was admitted to hospital in July 2019 in the northern Spanish city of Oviedo. In the past, he had been targeted for high blood pressure, arterial fibrillation, he also had an aortic valve replacement in 2013. Blood tests revealed anemia, low levels of white blood cells and platelets, and reduce kidney function. However, the heart showed a valve replacement was not working and identified a slight thickening in the smaller veins, suggesting endocarditis, a potentially fatal bacterial infection. Now, this gentleman continued to be ill for the next year, and was eventually tested for HIV at the age of 83 years old. And of course, his blood test came back as being positive for having HIV. He was started on a triple antiretroviral treatment, and 1 year after, his viral load is undetectable. It was in the millions, 180 million copies to start off with. He's been on treatment for a year. He's now undetectable. 2 years after after starting treatment, the male is well and has just celebrated his 85th birthday.
Wow. God bless him.
It just shines a light on the fact that, you know, healthcare professionals aren't testing older adults, and because they assume that they're not sexually active. But obviously, this gentleman is showing.
We are.
Yeah, you know, so it's important, isn't it? You know, that again, HIV isn't just blown out of the water because of your age or your gender or whatever it might be. Mm. You know, it's
complete naivety, isn't it?
Mm. Yeah,
and it shows you the power of treatment, doesn't it?
It really does.
It was so high, and then now he's undetectable in such a short period of time. That's amazing.
Yep.
Gosh.
So mine's from the Gay Times. It's a UK story. So there's a new docuseries about Britain's history with HIV, and that's going to premiere on World AIDS Day. So the new HIV docuseries is about Britain's 40-year battle with the virus. It's called Positive, and will feature intimate testimony from some of the first people to be diagnosed with HIV in the UK. It will examine the history of the country and its stigma towards those living with the virus, as well as intolerance and homophobia. Across this three episodes, and the series starts with the UK's first recorded cases in 1981 and tracks the virus to the present day. PrEP and other treatment methods will be featured prominently in the show, and is sure to educate audiences on what living with the virus is actually like. So that's called Positive, and it premieres on Sky Documentaries and now on World AIDS Day, and that's the 1st of December at 9 p.m.
Wow, wonderful. So, Josh, I've just had a thought. Can I just mention for our listeners, Stephen, you've done a really great piece in Scene magazine recently, didn't you?
I did, yeah. So Scene magazine, it's a Brighton-based magazine, yeah. Isn't it? I've only seen it via Josh sent me a picture of it. I haven't seen it in person yet, but yeah, it's a really great interview. I was really pleased with it.
And you speak very kindly about the HIVR, so I'm just bit of a shout out for all on that one. I just thought I'd mention, but yeah, if you want to see a bit of Stephen's story, which is an amazing story, please do get the magazine. I think you can get it online as well, and obviously you'll see him talk about how wonderful we are on the HIV hour. So there we go.
Yes.
Can
I just mention this weekend, there's a thing called the Brighton Box, which is in Brighton, is an exciting new contemporary LGBTQ owned art gallery and gift centre based in Duke's Lane in Brighton. Now they're doing a launch of a stunning 2020 calendar at the Sussex Beacon Shop, which is the bottom of St James Street. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be on Saturday the 13th of November between 1 p.m. and 3 p.m. They've got four artists who've worked on the calendar, and they'll be doing a site. They'll be signing stuff. So yeah, go down there and check them out. So she's going to be down there at the launch. So check it out.
Good.
Okay.
That's a great show, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Another one in the bag. All right.
Great.
See you. Okay. Speak to you next week.
See you next week.
Take care, everybody, and take care to all of our listeners. Keep safe and keep warm.
HIVR is the UK's only show for people living with HIV, sharing stories, news and views on living positively with the virus.